Morning.
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 I'm Michelle Horsfield, and I've been invited to talk to you a little bit about the singer's viewpoint, what you can do to help the singer. I'm sure that all of you have aspirations and dreams of becoming and to continue on with your studies here to put it into practical use. I'd like to give you a little background of where I have been and where I am now. My family were all famous musicians back in Philadelphia, New York, and at the age of 3, and I'm never afraid to tell my age because I'd rather you say, well, gee, you look pretty good for that age, and to say, hey, who is she kidding? But I'm 55, I'm going to be 56 in November. I'll talk to them about your grades.
I
said
it.
However, I studied from the time I was 3, there was quite a dichotomy in the family. There was a great deal of classical music, but for fun, we were all very, very interested in the music of the day. Now, I have found that most classicists, not all of them, but most of them are very arrogant about their music. You know, I listen to nothing but Beethoven and Brahms and Shostakovich and so forth. And when they hear pop music, they put it down. But, well, I'm going to get to this after. Let me just finish up with the family bit. Anyway, my dad was a concert pianist, very fine pianist. But on weekends, he would get a dance band together and they'd go out and they'd play jobs. And when I was 3, they took me to see a vaudeville show, and I was so enthralled with it that there was a man and a woman that came out on the stage, and they were singing "If You Knew Susie Like I Knew Susie" with the cane and the hat. And so they started to sing it, and I jumped up in my seat and said, "Oh, oh, oh, what a girl!" They stopped the show. So they looked at each other, didn't know what to do, and finally the man whispered something to the woman who was performing, and they came down and got me and said, just follow us. So that was my introduction into performing, and it was a lot of fun, and I've been doing it ever since. When I was about 11 or 12, Ella was my favorite singer. She wasn't much older than I would say Ella's about 60-some right now. They say 70. That isn't true. She wasn't. She can't be more than about 65. I'd say not even, maybe 63. And I listened, of course, in my era, the big band was the thing. Benny Goodman and the Dorseys, Tommy and Jimmy Dorsey, and just so many of them, Artie Shaw, and although I was studying voice and doing the classics, I also was very much interested in singing pop, and I learned how to flatten the voice so that I didn't get the heavy vibrato that was needed for the classics and still sing correctly and still be able to carry out and give a nice, even flat sound. Now, not flat as far as pitch is concerned, you understand, but flat so that we don't get the type of thing, but and it's still correct. It's not back in the throat. You're not choking to death on it. You can do it and do it well and sing all night and never get into trouble. Well, I continued my studies, and I hate to say I was precocious, but I must have been, they tell me, because I graduated high school when I was just barely 16. I had skipped a couple of grades in school. And then started to study really, you know, really put a lot into it. Of course, I played the piano, and that was almost by osmosis because I had had about 18 months of piano, yet I can play anything at sight that's put in front of me, and even with these old arthritic fingers, and I can transpose at sight anything, note for note, not chords, note for note. Now that just is something that happened to be, I don't know why I can do it, but I do it. And met this wonderful man that I'm with and decided that I wasn't going to be an opera star anymore. I was going to get married and still continue with my music. So I married quite young and we proceeded to move to New York City, where we found refuge in a home in Greenwich Village, who I later found out belonged to Auntie Maine. So I lived with Auntie Maine for about 3 years, but her name wasn't Auntie Maine to me. I had no idea that she was going to be immortalized in a book by her nephew. Her name was Marion Tanner, and we lived at 72 Bank Street in Greenwich Village. And started to go down to the village, and I'd look around, and Teddy Wilson was playing at Cafe Society downtown, and there was a very famous pianist over in Nick's in the village, and pretty soon I started to walk in and I'd start singing with him. The famous pianist, by the way, was Fats Waller, and he used to go in quite frequently with the owner and a man that played piano named Cliff Jackson, who was never world-renowned, but was a magnificent pianist, and he was your typical, very fine pianist that you find, and I'm sure from wherever you are, in a particular lounge in your town, and you think, my goodness, don't you always say to him, hey, what are you doing here? I think Billy Joel immortalized that in his song, The Piano Man. Hey man, you know, what are you doing here? And this is very typical. You'll find so many magnificent musicians that will never, ever, for one reason or another, and maybe just because of the numbers, you know, how many can reach the top, so to speak, but who are magnificent musicians. And some of them I find even finer than those who are enjoying world acclaim. So this has been my background. We moved, we proceeded to have children, which was very normal, and my husband decided that the kids just weren't getting what he felt they should have in New York City. We were given an opportunity to move to Portsmouth, Ohio, when the Atomic Energy Commission started to build this Goodyear plant, this atomic plant in Waverly. So we came to Portsmouth, and I'll never forget, my children expected horses, cowboys, I think even Indians are going to have a horse. You see, it was very far for them. And we stayed there for a short while and then came up to Columbus, where my husband had a cerebral aneurysm, which was supposed to have killed him, and fortunately, of course, did not. That was many years ago, and that left me to do what? Well, I decided that I would teach voice. And everybody said, well, you're crazy, you'll never make a living at it. And I said, oh, yes, I will. I love people. I know this inside and out. I can communicate well. What else do I need? I have a degree, but my degree was in performance. I had a degree from the Philadelphia Conservatory. My degree was in performance. I would have needed maybe two courses, a course in psychology or a course in something else, to give me the degree that I would need in education and teach in a school. But I didn't want to teach in a school, and I'll tell you why. Because it's too structured. And I am not a structured person. I am a disciplined person for myself. You know, I take baths, I scrub my teeth, that sort of thing. But I am creative enough that I feel that I do not want to be confined. They tell you in a large school, I'm not trying to put schools down, but this is exactly what happens in many cases. They give you something, and for 6 weeks, you swallow it, and at the end of those 6 or 12 weeks, you're supposed to regurgitate it on a piece of paper. Now, to me, that's not learning, and that's not education. I think you have to open up the mind of the individual and get them to proceed and to become aware of themselves and where they are. And that's true education. And then begin to absorb whatever you might have of value to give to them. And if they reject it, fine.
Yeah.
They may come upon something that they find is better, right? Hey, very true. I agree. I insist that my students constantly question. And if it's wrong, and I have to think about that. And if my students say it to me, and I think, well, what am I using this for? This isn't really doing very much good. I throw it away. You know, you don't follow a set pattern and say, this is it. This is the ultimate. Nothing can be added to it. That's not so. I think one of the most important things in being successful is, and successful for yourself. You know whether you're successful or not. I'm not talking about, you know, successful in terms of what the world thinks is success. That may be all right too. I'm not putting that down, but I'm talking about yourself. That if you create within yourself an idea, you all want to be engineers, most of you. I mean, this is your goal. This is why you're here. Okay, and that's why I'm giving you a background about me, and then I'd like to give you some tips and pointers as to what to expect when the singer comes in. You will be working with singers, and if you are working in a local, wherever you are from, studio, you're going to work with mostly people who want to become famous, who want to make a tape or a record, who are not maybe fully developed yet, and you can do a lot to help them. And this is where I want to get to. Well, I'd like to tell you a little bit about the pop thing. When I started to teach, I thought, and I finally found that this came out just a few years ago because a doctor friend of mine who has a great deal of respect for me and I for him went to a symposium at Juilliard, and he brought back the transcripts of the three-day symposium on voice. And at the very end, this big man, this big world-renowned doctor for the throat makes a statement that I, in my not so quiet, but in my small way, in my own place in Columbus, Ohio, I've been saying for years and telling these voice teachers who are not successful, who have to take another job because they can't get enough students, look, 85% of the people singing are singing pop music. 15% are singing classic. Where in the heck are you? Don't you think that these people need help in learning how to use the voice? How to preserve it, how to keep it so that this voice does not deteriorate. Why only give it to 15% of the people who want to sing Madame Butterfly or Tosca or Turandot or whatever? How about the people that want to sing Come On Baby, Let's Go, or whatever they sing? I mean, the words today are Let's Get It On, Baby, Oh Baby, Oh, and, you know, well, some of them blow my mind, but I guess it's all right. However, let's sing it right. If you're going to scream, and I have listened, and when I heard this young man from Led Zeppelin, who I thought had a remarkable voice, I said, if he doesn't get to a teacher soon, he's going to lose his voice, and he has. Has anybody heard Robert Plant lately? Yeah. He can't make it anymore, can he? He does not know how to scream. There is a way that you can scream if you can do it correctly and not rack up your throat. But you have to learn it. There's somebody out there who can teach it to you. And if you go to an arrogant dummy who says, I'm sorry, but if you don't sing the classics and if you can't play the piano, I can't teach you. As I know one woman in town does, and she gets most students. My students all have to play the piano, and they all have to learn the play. Fine. You know, when she talks and I used to go to these symposiums, and I go, hey. Down. That's not where I'm at. I hope, where it is. The practical, easy application of this that has to do with everyday singing, whether you want to sing in the shower, whether you want to make a record just to feel good about it, whether you have dreams of becoming a star, or just a mini star in your own town where you are playing night after night after night after night. We have in the room here, and he may not like me saying this, but we have in the room here a young man whose father is probably one of the finest bassists in the country. He was tired of being on the road with all the biggies, and he finally decided that he would settle. And so Corky's dad is now playing. Let me tell you about his father. His father is not only a magnificent bass player, but he is a marvelous singer. He's going to have an album out soon. He sings exquisitely. Now here is a man who, I would say, how old is dad? About 50? Yeah, he's about 5 years my junior. Here is a man who, for all these years, has preserved, because he studied, he knows where it's at vocally, and he can really bring your heart out singing the blues. Really, he's a tremendous, if you get an opportunity, go to the Christopher Inn in Columbus before you leave and hear Cornell sing. He's wonderful and plays marvelous bass. Anyway, I'm not trying to advertise for your dad, Courtney, but I decided that if I'm going to teach, I'm going to teach the pop singer. Now, I also teach classics. They're my love. I love them. I think they're exquisite. I think that for those who want to continue on with them and to do something with it, I'm for it. I send many students to college, and they all come running back after 6 months, throwing up their hands and saying, I don't understand it. We had such a wonderful rapport. You looked me in the eye. We talked. I felt good. Now I go in and I'm out the door. That's unfortunate, isn't it? But this is the way it is with most instructors. They're not really teachers. They're instructors, and they're not instructing very much. However, in my teaching, I found that I had to give practical, simple explanations. There's no point in talking about the poitrine when nobody knows what the poitrine is and whether the poitrine and the latrine are related or what. Nobody wants to know. You talk simple language, and that's the way I do it. When you sing, you have a certain stance that enhances the voice, and it is that you tuck your butt under. Now, I thought about that for a long time. How am I going to say this? Well, I'll tell you how I say it. I say to everybody, look, when you stand up and you tuck the butt under and you put the cheeks under and you hold a dime and you don't drop the dime. Now, that is simple, and it's something that you can relate to, correct? Do you know it works? I can't tell you how many of my singers who are out singing with groups tell me, boy, my voice was getting tired. I was in this room where the air was poor, and all of a sudden I remembered what you told me about tucking the butt under. And you know, I began to push from that position, and I got the notes out, and I didn't strain my voice. Well, to me, that's success. Then I feel that I've done something right. See, this is what I taught them, and I said it simply, and they can relate to that. In singing, you actually are speaking on varying pitches. It should be a simple, easy flow. You're a wind instrument. You're a wind instrument. You cannot make a sound without air moving over the vocal cords. So therefore, you have to have enough air. You have to have a strong, well-developed diaphragm. And I don't want to shock you, but stand up. I want you to feel my rib. Just put your hands out. Okay? Tight and wide. Through the development, I've developed a terrific pair of rib. I've got a terrific rib cage. And this is what you do develop, no matter how narrow you might be. You must develop the lung capacity, and of course the ribs begin to move when the lungs, right? They are not stationary. They flange and they'll move with your breathing. This is very important. In fact, to me, this is most important. I saw a couple of you smoking, and to me that's a no-no, but I don't preach it. I just tell it that anything that you put in your lungs anything, whether it's pot, I don't care. I always say to my students, if you have to smoke pot, make brownies. Don't smoke it. Don't put it in your lungs. When you put it in your lungs, you're putting something that is taking the place of air. It's that simple to me. Don't put it in your lungs. Nothing but air in the lungs. But I don't make them quit. That's up to them. That's their prerogative to smoke. I just tell them what it does. And I do get a kick out of it when they'll say, I don't smoke cigarettes, Mrs. Worsfield. Oh, okay. And that's when I suggest, why don't you make, can you sniff it? I don't know. I know people have snuff, whatever. However, I don't want anything in the lungs but air. Now, I thought maybe if I were to give you some pointers on singing, that it might help you in your capacity as an engineer when this person comes in to sing, to help them in some way. Here's this person coming in, male or female, and they're usually pretty frightened. If they're not really a professional and they're going to record, they have an apprehension. They feel a little, okay? Am I right? Wouldn't you? No? Well, see, you're different. Okay. Now, if this person comes in and they feel reluctant, tight, the first thing I'd like you to do is to put them at ease. And if you find that they are tight, get them to breathe. Give them a breathing exercise. Get them to do some breathing. Let me show you. I'm going to ask all of you to stand up. We don't put enough air into our lungs. Our lung capacity is much greater than we will ever put to use, believe me. So I'm going to ask you to learn a breathing exercise. This is the first exercise I give when my students come for the first time. And I want you to get the idea of it. You stand with the buttocks tucked under, like I showed you, holding that dime between your cheeks. Okay, now the shoulders are straight, but nothing is ever contrived. You never do this. Everything is relaxed, complete relaxation. And I want you to take a breath, and a deep breath, through your nose. And let me tell you why. Because I utilize the nose as well as the mouth in singing, because the nose filters air, it warms air, and it also moistens the throat when it's dry. And if any of you sing at all, you know that if you sing a lot, and especially in a room that is not well ventilated, has a lot of smoke, has a lot of heavy air in it, then you start to get extremely dry. Then the next breath that you can catch through your nose, now you can't do this all the time because you can't catch it quick enough through the nose, but say the band has a little interlude where the guitar does a lick or the drums, then take your breath through your nose and immediately you've moistened your throat. Now you try it. Take a deep breath through your nose and you will see that the throat is moist. Now the other thing is, breathe in through your mouth and you feel a shock immediately on the glottis. Immediately. Now take a deep breath through your mouth. Don't you get that catch? Now do it through your nose and you'll see the difference. Try it through the nose. Isn't that more languid and better? Take your first breath if you're out singing through the nose, okay? Now you've warmed your air and you've filled up your lungs. And here is the next step. You slowly but very rhythmically exhale through your teeth, like so. And you keep that going, and you keep it going, and you keep it going, and you try to do it as long as possible, all the time the buttocks is tucked under, and you keep going until you haven't got any more, and then you give a push from the buttocks, and you see how much more air will come out. Thank you. Really, now try it. I'm very serious now. From now on, I'm going to be serious. You caught a cold? Give a little push. It feels wonderful. It really does. There's a good feeling, and you begin to feel the muscles in that diaphragm throbbing. This is really where it's at and clinging. Right here. If you haven't got good diaphragmatic muscles, you haven't got anything. I heard Barbara Mandrell the other night on Lawrence Welk. She wrote a letter to him, and he invited her, and I felt sorry for her because she really is a cute little gal. But it was, almost heaven. I could talk, and it was all horse. And at the end, West Virginia, mountain mama, take me home, country road. See? The push. They don't know where to push. It's unfortunate, because I hear some good voices. I mean, really good voices in pop music. But they don't last long if they don't know how to do it. Let's try it again. I'll tell you something. You time yourself. Any of you who have a second hand, I would say the average goes between 20 and 30 seconds. I would say that between 30 and 45 is very good, and you can build up to 1 minute. It can be done. And if you do that,
how much air do you let out in your lungs?
You let it out, yes, very controlled through the teeth. But it's a steady stream now. Don't let it waver. It really feels good. You do it 20, 30 times a day, and you'll see what will happen, the development here. Try it again. Now, through the nose you breathe. Let's breathe through the nose. Fill up here. Don't raise the shoulders. Don't raise the shoulders. Now this will also help that person. You see, you're flooding your body with air. Relax. Feels good. It really does. Good. Doesn't that feel good? You have flooded your air. You have flooded your head with air. Do you realize that we use, I would say, 1/10 of our lung capacity? Maybe 20%, I don't know. But I know we don't use enough of it. And the brain feeds on air. Every breath you take in, the brain is going to take 75% of that. And that shows why we don't have very many geniuses around, because we don't get enough air to stimulate. No, I'm serious. We're not getting enough air to stimulate our brains. That gray matter, this is true. We don't breathe deeply enough. We really do not. And this is part of our problem. Why we get too warm in the summer, why we get too cold in the winter, because that air is balancing our body temperature, how much air we take in. And we just don't take in enough. Air is the primary concern of the singer. You can sit down now, guys and gals. The next thing that involves good singing, not only that you have enough air and that the air is moving over the vocal cords properly, but the next thing has to do with the vocal cords themselves. And I have a certain group of exercises that helps what I call make the vocal cords more resilient, elastic. So you need the vocal cords to stretch. And I have given as much as an octave and a half to some people who have very, very narrow, very confined, very small range. Sing pop music, and to sing it well, you should have at least, I would say, 2 octaves. You need 2 octaves. I would probably figure, I'd like to see a low G, and then two octaves, an octave above middle C, G, that G above middle C. And there's two good octaves. Some people have a little lower, a little higher voice. I have some gals who are out singing who can sing up to a high C. They don't use it except maybe to make a scream once in a while, but or to do some kind of an obbligato thing that's real good. But I've developed one girl in town who is doing very well, and she could not sing above a C, above middle C. She could not sing a C above middle C. She now sings almost a full octave above that. She sings an A, just below high C. And we're real proud of that. And she's been coming to me for 3 years, and we just work on range, keep talking about when she goes out of town for 2 or 3 weeks or a month, she runs back and says, help. She just happens to need that weekly reiteration of what to do to keep her going. These are things that you can't get into in the studio, but it's nice to know. You might say to that person, your jaw is too tight. Or they say, oh, I'm not singing well. Oh, I'm so, your jaw is too tight. Drop the jaw. That's number one. Drop the jaw. You see, relaxation. Drop the jaw. It's important that you drop the jaw, that you don't sing this way. And so many of these people think that because the mic is hanging here, that they have to do this in order to get into it, especially if they're short like I am. No, just drop the jaw. Put the tongue forward, resting behind these teeth. Make it low, behind the teeth. Now you see, you try it. Just try it. Drop the jaw, put your tongue forward, and you'll see how nice and relaxed that is. Do it real easy. Right? Easy. Now you'll be able to sing. You see, if you're going to sing, what you're trying to do is to have yourself in such a position that nothing is impeding the progress of that sound coming out. Now you know most people sing from the throat. Right? That's wrong. See, it's all wrong, because what you've done is you've stopped the sound right there and you've just clutched it. You gotta move it up here into the... This is called the vocal mass or the facial mass. Here's where you do all your resonating. So you move it from here, you take that nice deep breath and you just let the sound come up and out. Take a deep breath. Singing should be easy. Singing should not be a chore. Singing should be easy. Yes, dear.
When I went to high school, my music teacher always taught us to sing from the diaphragm.
That's exactly right. Right from here. That's it. Correct. And when these muscles are strong and when you can get them to move properly, let me tell you something else. When you are singing and when you are moving that sound out, and you have good control of these muscles, they'll work at will for you. Here's where the push comes from. Here and here. I haven't eaten yet, so I'm going to burp. Every time I move that diaphragm, I'm hungry. Now, that's another thing. It is best not to eat much before singing, because the stomach, when it fills up, doesn't give enough room for everything else to expand here, because the stomach is full. So it is best, and these are, there are some old wives' tales in singing that I don't adhere to. But there are others that have been passed on through the years that I do. I absolutely refuse to allow anyone to suck on a lemon or to drink orange juice. That's ridiculous. Sucking on a lemon only makes you go and go around singing. That doesn't relax you. Orange juice is a little too thick and sweet. I prefer, if a person has to drink on the job, I prefer for them to drink 7 Up, a beer that isn't, beer's all right, you drink beer. Any drink that is not real sweet and does not have ice in it. Ice tends to constrict the throat. Nothing real hot unless it is lukewarm tea or coffee, but not hot tea or coffee. That makes it too flaccid, and then you don't have enough control. So be moderate. If you're going to drink anything and you have to moisten the throat, I suggest that you drink Perrier water. It's very, very good, but it's okay from the refrigerator, but no ice in it. Yes?
I sing with the band, and when I do, when we play, I usually keep a thing of honey and lemon. Now, is that
now,
bad?
Do you have water in it?
Yeah.
That's all right. I'm talking about sucking on a lemon. Yeah, honey, water, and lemon is fine. That's fine. Yes?
I sing with
that you spray and it numbs the throat. This is bad stuff. Try a little bit of maple syrup. I think I'm better than honey. Mm-hmm. Maple syrup. There's a very famous thing that Muhammad Ali goes on the maple syrup, honey, or maple syrup, lemon or lime, and water, and he uses that for 30 days. He eats nothing 30 days before a fight, and he just lives on that. It gives you a lot, yeah. It's a cleanse, and it's very good. Yes?
I always heard that you should not drink milk or...
That's correct. Nothing that causes phlegm. Any milk or milk product, yes.
What about alcoholic beverages?
Well, let me put it this way. I don't drink. I don't think that an alcoholic beverage can hurt in moderation. As well, I'm concerned not with the alcohol, I'm concerned with, now I'm not talking about drinking constantly,
right.
I'm saying if you wanted to sip a drink, I'm concerned with the ice, with it being too hot, with the young man in the back who talked about the menthol and you don't need that. It should be, I know a lot of people who drink beer and that doesn't bother them at all, in fact it would cut phlegm. I don't drink, as I said, I don't drink anything, but I'm not, you know, I'm not against as long as it's in moderation.
Would the alcoholic beverage, besides make you lazy, you know, if you drink...
Well,
you
all that depends on how, sure.
Does it affect the vocal cords like the chloroseptic spray? You know, would it make
well,
it...
Well, anything that has that kind of an effect would have an effect on every part of your body.
Sure.
Haven't you heard people who speak and their speech is very slurred because the whole body is affected by it. I think that you have to determine whether that's going to bother you or not. How much do you drink, and be honest with yourself? Sometimes if your throat burns and it happens to bother you a little bit, maybe a drink, maybe a little scotch and water would help. I don't know. Or whatever. But I say moderation. If you're going to drink all night long, no. No. If you're going to take one drink, two drinks, fine, and you're sipping all the time, I would say okay. I wouldn't even suggest that he drink his honey and lemon and water all night long, all constantly.
I know of a lot of singers that keep like a fifth of a 7 cup for Jack Daniels, and they just drink it all night. By the end of the night, their voice is so raspy, they can't get any notes at all.
Mm-hmm. You see, that's so out of it. There's no discipline there. That's wrong. Yes.
I hear somewhere that somehow the carbonated water and soda mixes with the oxygen to form carbon dioxide. Can you drink or something like that?
I didn't hear that. I'm sorry. In all my years, that could be. I won't disclaim it I haven't heard everything, so I don't know. Yes.
What can you do if your voice goes up? and then still, you know, you can never laugh.
You mean if your voice goes, quit singing for the night. Quit singing for the night. Now I'm telling you, quit singing. If that voice goes, it's telling you something, and you better pay for it. If your leg hurts, you don't walk on it. Don't do that to your voice. See, this is what's wrong with so many people. They don't realize this is a wonderful instrument we've been given. It's our greatest means of communication. Okay? It will last us forever. I have heard opera singers at the age of 75 who are magnificent, but they knew how to take care of their voices. That's why I'm so adamant about this with the pop singer. He too and she too can go for a long period of time if they would do the same thing. The opera singer has a great deal of pride and respect and feels, oh, you know, this is a very important thing to be doing. But the pop singer doesn't feel that way. That's what's wrong. The pop singer doesn't have enough respect for his instrument. And so he abuses it. And because he abuses it, he loses it. He loses it. There are a few. The one that makes me weep is Frank Sinatra, who I adored and thought was one of the finest singers of pop music. And he sounds absolutely dreadful. He just completely abused his voice. And yet a man like Perry Como hasn't. He's 60-some years old and he's still singing well. Oh, oh my. Oh, let's not. Now, again, when your singer comes into that studio and is uptight, get them to do that exercise that I showed you, that breathing exercise, and if you see that they are beginning to move this up, say, relax, relax, drop the jaw, relax, put that tongue forward. If you put your tongue forward, do you know that you can't tighten your throat? Only when the tongue goes back can it tighten. Now you try it. Just let it rest quietly behind these teeth. As soon as you try, now try to tighten your throat, it'll pull right back. You cannot tighten your, because the tongue is connected. You cannot tighten your throat if your tongue is loose. Okay? Now, also, if someone comes into the studio and said, I'd like a session tomorrow or next week, whatever, do tell them you don't want to drink anything that has milk or any milk product, no ice cream, no milk, nothing that is, nothing that has a lot of butter in it, cheese. All of this tends to clog the throat and create phlegm. So let's stay away from that. And that's, I think that they appreciate that. That's important for them to know. Okay? The other thing is, you know, we're talking about all these little techniques, and all of the little techniques are very important. But the most important part of this whole thing is expression. To get a person to really understand and express what they're singing correctly. You learn technique in order to throw it away. You learn technique in order to throw it away. You don't think about walking when you walk. You just say, I want to walk, and you walk. It's natural. The idea of voice lessons, as far as I'm concerned, the idea is to learn so well how to do it correctly that it becomes a part of you. And then you don't think about it. Don't think about it. Just sing. That's the true artist. The artist who already knows the technique, who has already done all of this, and just opens his mouth and sings. I have been places where a person, someone has said, oh, would you sing? What can I say to them? My throat hurts. I haven't had anything to eat. It's early morning. I just opened my mouth and said. If somebody asked me to sing, I open my mouth and I say it. That's the way it should be. There isn't just the proper time to sing. Singing is expressing. You're trying to express an idea. A song that's been very popular lately is a song that Bette Midler did in The Rose. And a young lady who studied with me and was moving to California asked me to sing for her wedding. And she asked me to sing some pop things, plus the Lord's Prayer, which I did. And one of the songs was The Rose. And I sang it, and there was a young family in front, young man and wife and two kids. And when I got through, it was the nicest compliment I had ever received. He just sat there and he went. Because you see, when he saw me, he saw this woman, and he expected me to get up and to sing it like a classical song. And I sang it very simply. I sang it the way I felt it. I did not try to imitate Bette Midler. That's ridiculous. I just wanted to be me singing this song, and I thought it had wonderful words. I hadn't memorized them. I had them in front of me, but I'm pretty good at glancing and picking, you know, rather than I wasn't doing this. But I've since memorized them because they were such lovely words, and I thought they had such meaning to them. And I was entranced by the words. Now, the song is very simplistic, but you will note something. You will find that some of the most popular songs and the songs that make the biggest hits are the most simplistic songs. You, in this position, are probably more sophisticated musically than most people. But you have to understand that you have to appeal to the masses. And what will grab those people and have some meaning for them? I have heard classical music done very simply and have tremendous appeal to people who are uneducated musically. You know, actually, it was the folk music of the day for those people. It was their pop music. That was their pop music, their folk music. And so today we have our pop music and our folk music. And I believe that we should not put it down. We went through a tremendous period of disco, which is now on its way out. I wasn't particularly fond of that. I thought that it... I suppose that it had some merit. Maybe the merit was that it had people moving, they danced to it. What I found offensive was some of the words, I'll be very frank with you. I was disappointed in Donna Summers because I feel that she has a magnificent voice, and I am sure now she will do better things. She'll expand her horizons. The beat was fine, I suppose, but the constant monotonous sound over and over and over and over and over. I heard one that went, let's dance, let's dance, let's dance. This went on for 15 minutes. Now, I suppose if you're dancing, that's okay, but it's certainly boring to anybody who might be listening to it. I like things that are innovative. I happen to, of all the pop music, I happen to be most fond of jazz. Well, of course, you see, that's my era. The old innovative jazz. I like gospel. I love gospel music. I like jazz. I like some of the things that are being done today. I thought the music from The Rose was pretty good, although the New Yorker said it was lousy. I thought it was pretty good. I thought... That was an old song, When a Man Loves a Woman, isn't that it? I thought that was pretty sharp. the title song, I thought, had a lovely meaning, beautiful words. We don't have to apologize for our music. And we can, if any of you are writers, do you do any original things in your band?
We do not.
Sure. Wonderful. I'm for that. Keep doing it. Does anybody have any questions they'd like to ask me about voice? Yes.
Well, one thing is how can you tell a good teacher from a bad teacher? Because like in St. Louis, there are a lot of vocal coaches.
You'll know by the way you sound. You'll know.
But, you know, like, is there going to be like an immediate difference?
I would say give a teacher 6 weeks. If you don't feel better, if the throat is beginning to hurt when you sing, if you find any constriction anywhere, if you are being told some wild theory, like if you stand on this rug, which is an oriental rug, you can sing better or some such thing. There was a teacher in New York City that if you stood on the oriental rug, you were supposed to sing better. That is a truth. And he went to a lot of incantations and so forth. Now, I suppose that was fine for something else, but it wasn't fine for singing. It didn't make anyone sing better. Believe me. It's a very simple process. It just needs a lot of guidance. You really need a guide. I say that there is no such thing as a teacher anyway. What can a teacher teach you that you're not open and receptive to receive? So you're the teacher. They give you ideas and material to work with. And that rapport that you can talk back and forth, a lot of understanding. Yes, dear?
No, I would. I did have a question on
yes.
More than rule. Are you still getting one?
Yes.
I
have probably the largest voice studio in Ohio. I'm waiting list of about 85, 90 people. But I usually take, and I have a lot of people come in who are on the road that occur with me and come by. And maybe take an hour or two, put it on tape. I believe in tape. I think tape is wonderful because I think that tape is something that you keep. I have my student come in usually, but I have a lovely cassette at home. And I have my student come in and bring a tape, and we put that on tape. Now, see, that student could go home and in the privacy of the room without any feeling of, oh, I'm disturbing my father or my brother or my mother or my girlfriend or whatever, they can practice. Dirty if you want to keep it. People have said to me, aren't you afraid somebody will steal this? Steal what? I'm giving it to them. I mean, I'm not afraid to steal what? It belongs to the universe. I just have my particular way of saying it. You know, I don't have anything that I feel that I have to put an exclusive on, except my own way of expressing, that's all. I think that's why, listen, you can go out and buy a book on singing, but I'm going to tell you something. You'll never learn to sing by reading a book about it. And there are some magnificent books, I've read them. And they're fine, well, they reiterate what I believe, and you know, but they can't teach you to sing. You need someone to guide you, weekly. I would say one lesson a week at least. If you're really gung-ho, two or three, and if you can afford it. Yes, dear?
What do
I charge? I'm very cheap. I charge $8 a half an hour. And everybody says, is that all? Well, I have students who are teaching who are charging $7. But I'm not a vainglorious person. You know, it's adequate for me, and I don't want to cut out the little gal that goes out and babysits in order to pay me. So.
How much is it once for a week then, for half an hour?
I would say once a week is adequate. If any of you decide to take voice lessons, I think to start once a week is adequate. If you have something that you have to work up to, something that you have to prepare for, I would suggest that you take more. But that's only if you're preparing for something. I have a young man who's preparing an audition for state. He wants to go to state and he wants to be a classical singer. And we've been working 2-3 times a week preparing this program that he's going to do in order to pass his exams. I do suggest this. I think that anyone who wants to do music should have a basic knowledge of music. I think we've kind of put the cart before the horse when we get up and we sing and we do all of these things and we don't know anything about music. We don't know anything about timing. We don't know anything. We have an instinct, and that's wonderful. But I think that you people came here and you wanted to learn about how to be an engineer. Well, if they didn't have any equipment here and you couldn't actually do that thing, you know, I think you would be feel that you were not getting your money's worth. I feel that if you're going to do music, for goodness sake, learn the basic rudiments of music. Learn how to read, even if you just learn to read a treble line. Learn how to read. Learn the scale. Learn what it means to have a dot after a note. What does it mean? This makes it so much better for you. You can pick up a piece of music and just whip it right off. There's a man in town, in Columbus. Roberta Sherwood was here in town. Now, I think she's a fine old lady, but she never could sing. But she had a bunch of fancy charts, and her accompanist became ill. And they handed them to a lot of people who are supposedly good pianists. And you know, Johnny Elmer came forth, and he looked at them, and he whipped them out, and he played them better than her pianist did. And they just went crazy. They couldn't believe it. But here is a man who plays the most magnificent jazz piano you've ever heard. He did a concert just on Ellington not too long ago, and he was fabulous. And he dug out of the woodwork Ellington tunes that I'd never heard. And he did the most magnificent things with them. And I'd say he's a man about my age. Here were all these guys, you know, playing away, but they couldn't read a chart. Oh, I don't understand that. Learn your basics. If you're going to sing, somebody hands you a piece of music and say, hey, I wrote this song, sing it. And it has something to do with maybe you being the person who can sing the song and maybe put it on record for. I hope you can read it. Because the guy that can will probably get the job. Really. Especially studio musicians. Especially studio. If you want to work in a studio, if you want to do studio work, you know, you've got to be one up all the time. I'm going to sing a song for you. Okay? I'm just trying to think of what song to sing.
How about the Rose?
The Rose? The Rose? Oh, okay. I hope I remember the words. Some say love, it is a river that drowns the tender reed. Some say love, it is a razor that leaves your soul to bleed. Some say love, it is a hunger, an endless aching need. I say love, it is a flower, and you. It's only seed. It's the heart afraid of breaking that never learns to dance. It's the dream afraid of waking that never takes a chance. It's the one who won't be taken that never seems to give. And the soul afraid of dying that never learns to live. When the night has been too long and the road has been too long, and you think that love is only for the lucky and the strong, just remember in the winter, far beneath the bitter snow, lies the seed that with the sun in the spring becomes the rose. You know, I'll tell you a little secret. If you would ever like to sing a cappella, the thing to do is to play your accompaniment in your head. If you play your accompaniment in your head, then you won't go off key. Keep the accompaniment going in your head. That way, you have your beat, you have your rhythm going, and you play it right up in here. Learn to hear, not only with your ear, learn to hear up here. This is the hard one. That if you can, right now, for instance, you play and sing professionally, right? That you could close your eyes, or even with your eyes open, and you're not hearing it, but you can play one of your songs and sing it. And you've never opened your mouth, right? Can you do that? Sure you can. That's a wonderful way, you know? It's good for you. Train yourself. Everyone has within them some musical ability. I refuse to believe that there is no one, that there is anyone untrainable musically. Now, I'm not talking about degrees. There are all kinds of degrees of musical ability. But if you can speak, I believe you can sing. You can make some kind of a sound to sing. Anybody have any other questions? Yes.
I have two.
Yes.
The first one is, what is the difference between using your natural voice to the diaphragm and falsetto singing?
Okay. Now, falsetto is something that is particular to a man. A woman has no falsetto. She has what we call the three registers. We have chest, middle, and head register. Okay? I like to think that we sing in one line. So so that we don't have any breaks in the voice, and this is what I train people to do. But there is, from the very lowest pitch into the middle, into the head register. Now, then you go into another position, which is beyond the head register, which is called falsetto. And you can feel the click. It's way up in the sinuses, way up there. That register is like jumping a full octave. Actually, what you're doing is going into the female register, because men sing an octave lower than a woman. When a man sings, he is really pitched. If I sing, ah, and the man sings, ah, and imitates me, he's actually singing an octave lower. Okay? Now, what the falsetto does, let us say we're at middle C, and you start to sing the next note and you go into falsetto, you actually jump the full octave to the octave. To the D above that one. Do you know what I'm saying now? Your voice gets into that female register, you might say. Falsetto, by the way, for any of you who sing, is very good to have, and it's good to develop. And if you haven't developed it, go to a good teacher and help get that developed, because it really adds to the male voice. Again, women do not have falsetto. They have head voice, and it goes up into the higher and the higher and the higher. I had one girl who could hit a G above high C and hit it nicely. Oh, it was just like a bell. Now, see, if you mended that, that would have to be falsetto. But that was not falsetto. She was what they call a true coloratura soprano. She popped that out, and it's just like a little bell tinkling. It's pretty. She's in California now, so. You asked another question. Yes. Yes. Find a teacher and go to work.
That's why I asked.
You can do it. Go find a teacher and get that voice stretched right up there. You can do it. You had another question here.
One more thing with this falsetto.
Yes.
Is it the falsetto? Is that an, for the man? Is that an airflow type of thing, or is it a vocal cord type of thing?
No, it's all, it has to be part of the vocal cord, but it does have to do with what's up here, you see.
Okay, my other question was, what would be a good daily routine for a singer? I know, like a lot of performers, they're not just performers at nightclubs.
Yes.
Sometimes they have to hold a daily job.
Right.
Time is important.
Right.
But to keep yourself in shape, what would be a good daily exercise?
I would say the breathing exercise that I showed you. Now, again, let me tell you something about that breathing exercise. You can do that lying down, and you can do that sitting, because I do have students who play drums and play piano, and I teach them. I actually put a chair by the piano and have them sit, because we have to simulate the position that they're going to be in when they're performing. So if they're going to be performing, they might as well get the feel when they're in this position doing this sort of thing, you see, or this sort of thing, rather than standing. They may be able to do it well standing. Then as soon as they sit, they lose it. So we have to work from that position. I feel that that's very natural to do, you know, do it in the natural position there. So I would say that lying down is very good to do it. Standing up, do it about 10 times at once. Then wait for a little while and then do another 10 times. And remember, though, don't drop those shoulders and don't raise them. Keep them still. In other words, don't do this. Let me show you something. When you sing, you don't go, that does nothing. All you're doing is raising your shoulders, but you're not getting any more air. And when you are singing and you are letting the air out, don't drop the chest or the shoulder when you finish, and you just keep going, da 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 da. No. This always has to be free and in charge. The bosom, the shoulder, doesn't move. Only the diaphragm. So take the deep breath, keep the buttocks tucked under, do that 10 times. You're going to see a big difference. I expect you to write a letter to recording workshop and say, tell Michelle that it works. This increases your, what we're trying to do is get the breath capacity and get the diaphragm so that the muscles there are very strong. Now, the range increase comes with exercise. I'm sorry if I wish I had a tape here and a piano. I would play your exercise and you could all take one home. I'd give you about 6 exercises. But that's what you need. You need to move the voice. Now, you can do it on your own, only don't sing songs. Do an exercise like, just flow up and down. Then go, then do it chromatically. Then go up and down. So forth. I'm out of practice. Yes.
What's the proper way to scream? Because like the band I'm in, there's a couple songs we do and the vocals are really screeching. We have to put them at the end of the
night. You know, you're soft palate, but put the gun. Now, raise it up. Yawn. You feel it move up? Okay. Now, I want you to go. Raise your palate up. There is a difference.
Could you tell me any way to memorize a note
in your head?
Either lowest or highest. No, not in your head. It's like somehow it's like, I was trying to like find like the lowest note or highest note, memorize what that is, and at least by intervals be able to know what each note is.
You can do that. Just keep playing. Well, keep playing it on the piano. Play your G. Play your G below middle C, and keep playing it, or guitar, whatever instrument. And keep playing it and think it. You will sing it. You can surprise.
Like, I tried playing my lowest note. I thought I had it right, and then I went off and I came back and I could sing lower. And the next time I could sing higher, so I couldn't.
You're not trying. You're not continuing. Let me tell you something about this. I have a student who's been with me for 16 years. Now, she knows how to sing. She comes. It's that constant, daily, everyday thing and coming every week. You keep playing that, and you'll see what will happen. You don't give yourself time. You've got to know that it's got to be it gets boring. And you can bum, 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 walk away from it. Bum, 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 walk away from it. And then pretty soon you're singing that note, and you will hear it. Once you hear it in your head, you will have it. You know, there's an old, I was talking to someone, and they said, you know, that we are all, well, this is not music, but it's the same idea. We're all psychic. We just don't know that we have those powers. Okay? And this is true, that every one of us has within us a little bit of that ability. But we don't know it. And it's the same way with music. It is a natural thing. This is not something that you're asked to do that is not part of you. If you can speak, again, I'm going to say it. If you can speak, you can sing. I'm convinced of it. I have never turned anybody down that came to the studio because they didn't have a really good voice, because I figured we're going to help develop it.
Is it fairly easy to teach somebody to not sing a bad song?
I have taught someone, yes. I had about 3 or 4 students, and I've been teaching for 27 years. And I've had a couple of them. You have to teach them to listen, here and here. What time is it?
About 10 or something.
12? I'm going to excuse you. I think you've heard enough from me. I hope I didn't. I want you to all sing.